It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. We've got a fun one today. And if you have been following me, you know that I like cryptocurrency, crypto tech. And specifically, I like Bitcoin a bit more than the other ones, but there's a lot of cool projects out there. And so crypto is this fascinating new technology that everybody should have a little exposure to in their portfolio. We talk about how you can build things here at the Wealth Architect Podcast and how all the answers aren't just real estate, passive income, or the stock market, or gold, or whatever. We like to look at all different kinds of investment. And hey, if they're not for you, they're not for you. But today we welcome a founder of Crypto Y'all. I like the name of it. He's a full-time crypto investor. He's a crypto enthusiast. He's a business owner, all around cool guy. He got his start as a real estate investor, so he knows a bit about that. He finally discovered the power of crypto as a wealth building asset. And now he helps other people do the same thing. So please, let's welcome Josh Rhodes. So Josh, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm honored to be here. Fantastic and ready to talk crypto.
Let's talk some crypto. So first of all, you know, you're a business guy. And, you know, as a business guy, you got to make some really solid decisions, right? And so as you make solid decisions, why would you make this crazy decision to go into cryptocurrency? It's crazy. It's nutty. Everybody's losing all their money.
Yeah, I know. Well, it depends on what time frame you look at, right? Because if you zoom out enough, it's the highest performing asset class in history.
Sure is.
But yeah, I mean, I'm a crazy entrepreneur. I started drop shipping fixed gear bicycles out of a warehouse on the West Coast in my first online business, and I had no idea what I was doing, trying to do Facebook ads for the first time. And so I've always been the new opportunities have always been appealing to me. But really, what conditioned me was, you know, 20 years ago, I read this crazy book by a crazy guy named Robert Kiyosaki. It changed my life, the way I think about income and wealth and asset classes. And once I discovered blockchain and Web3, Bitcoin, et cetera, I quickly was able to like see the patterns of established asset classes, because it truly is the sixth asset class, and you can cash flow. It's accretive. You can use leverage. All of the things that you can do in real estate and business and stocks and everything else. So, except there's just a high level of velocity, which I'm a guy who enjoys velocity and momentum and small business and entrepreneurship. So personally, it really appealed to me.
Interesting. I mean, I have a program where we teach people how to make income from the stock market. And I just got off to one of our new off the phone with one of our new mentees. And I basically said to him, look, there's a personality for every different investment vehicle. And then there's your personality. And the goal is to match those up. And not everything is for everybody.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not a Shiba Inu kind of guy. I'm not a Dogecoin kind of guy. I'm a Bitcoin kind of guy. And I got a couple of other ones that I think are cool projects for the future, but there's 20,000 plus cryptocurrency projects out there. So how do you select, Josh?
Yeah. Well, you need a rubric, you need a framework. You need a checklist of some kind. But the first thing that I always tell people, you know, especially when you're just starting out, and you mentioned some of our favorite whipping boys like Shiba Inu and Dogecoin that do not have what we call a utility.
Yeah.
The litmus test in crypto, because the thing you need to understand is there's Bitcoin and there's crypto.
That's right.
They're two different, really different things. But, you know, Bitcoin has been finding itself for 13 years. You know, we wondered if it would be a replacement for money and cash. And now we're seeing that it may be just simply an adjacent store of value like gold. For the long haul, we'll see. Maybe it becomes more currency-like, but everything else is crypto, and that's basically a bunch of technology companies.
That's right.
So if you're thinking about it with the right lens, okay, if I'm investing in Amazon in 1999, or if I'm investing in Microsoft Windows, you know, Microsoft back in Windows 97, era.
Yeah.
Just thinking like Warren Buffett or any other investor would, what is this going to do to save money or make profit for real world businesses and individuals? Will it save time? Will it streamline processes? So there's a lot of crap coins out there, and there's a lot of high utility. For example, I just invested in a coin that is going to provide liquidity to the trucking industry in North America. It's a $1 trillion industry, but all the trucking companies, and there's a million of these companies, all the logistics and transportation and the way we get groceries, those drivers and those companies and those that diesel gas has to be paid for. Well, if your customer is Walmart, they're paying you on a net 180-day basis. So you might not get paid for 6 months on a job that you do. Well, what about cash flow? We're running small businesses here. Well, what's happened is the traditional banking industry provides a factoring service to help them basically payday loans for their cash flow.
Yeah, right.
So now there's a crypto coin coming into play to kind of act like the XRP of the trucking industry to provide liquidity to these trucking companies so they don't have to pay 25% a year on factoring services. That's a real utility that I can invest in because I know that those trucking companies are going to continue to provide real world goods, et cetera. So we want to look for what is going to actually make society better.
Yes.
Dogecoin, Shiba Inu, those are like community hype coins. You know, you might catch the wave, you might not. But if you zoom out and you have a longer term time horizon, those utility coins are going to be very, very, very valuable.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, here on the Wealth Architect podcast, we teach people how to structure their portfolios. We talk about macro. We talk about a lot of things. And one of the things we tell people that they should invest in is tech assets, right? Because the world is run by technology these days, right? Yeah. Even if you're a trucking company, if you don't have your logistics software down, you're not a very good, well-run trucking company. And there was a company, if you want to think of cryptocurrency in former terms, like you just mentioned Windows 97, you mentioned Amazon. That's how people get their brains around cryptocurrency, right? Is they can touch something that's an analogy from the past to see where it goes in the future. But a lot of times our brain doesn't bridge the gap. There was a company that I used to trade called FleetCor. And FleetCor was for truckers. Mm. And it was a trucking company that basically had their own private credit card or credit system. So it's very similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's an old world methodology that was just a credit card, which amazing. We're talking about credit cards being old world technology. Now it's possibly being replaced by utility that's crypto that takes out all these middlemen.
Yes.
And I want to get to Bitcoin because, you know, Bitcoin is like the new digital gold. And that's the easy way to say it. But if you think about the biggest, you know, you can look at what money is, store of value, exchange of value for an exchange medium, to buy and sell things. But the real big part of money is transportability. And you can't transport, $500,000 worth of gold really easily, but you can take a thumb drive with your Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, if it's available on that thumb drive, right? If you have the special thumb drive, and you can put it in your pocket or just memorize the codes for the thumb drive, not very hard.
Exactly, yeah.
And walk across a border. And that's helping people in Afghanistan and people in Ukraine. And you can't do that with gold. It gets taken from you. So looking at bridging those old world thinking to the new world thinking, that's why we have to start thinking about it as a tech asset, not a piece of gold. Nothing else like that. So let's talk a bit about Bitcoin. What do you think about Bitcoin? Is there any value there?
Oh, extreme. I mean, if I get going too long, I'll become very hyperbolic and I'll try not to be too biased, but I believe Bitcoin is one of the, if not the most valuable assets on the planet. And the only thing keeping people, everyday retail investors, from realizing that simply is that we're on the early part of the bell curve of adoption. But if you look at all the statistics that the Fidelities of the world, you know, they manage $10 trillion AUM, like they're paying attention. You know, they're putting out papers and they're putting out, they have dedicated full-time 20-year experience analysts watching adoption curves, and it's moving faster. The adoption of Bitcoin is faster than the internet adoption. It's faster than mobile phone technology. So it's quite literally just a matter of time. I think we're over 100 million Bitcoin wallet users now. And I think the next step is a billion. And it supposedly we're on a rate to get there by 2025, which, and then it just starts, you know, how exponential number, the hockey compounding hockey stick. So when that adoption continues to happen, and if there's a fixed supply of 21 million Bitcoin, which there is, it's pre-programmed, it's preconditioned, then it's kind of like the old saying with real estate, they ain't printing any more land. So no one can print Bitcoin. That's just a very fundamental, like, base level explanation of why it's valuable, is its scarcity.
Well, wait a minute. There's in cryptocurrency, can't you just like, doesn't Ethereum not have a cap on it? Doesn't Dogecoin have an unlimited cap?
Oh yeah. And that's why we need to talk about cryptos and Bitcoin differently.
So Bitcoin has a cap, right?
It does. And it's disintermediated, much like these examples with the trucking industry we talked about. And so you have, for example, the largest computer network on the planet is Bitcoin, not Google server farms.
That's right.
So when China, this is a great example, great illustration. In 2020, China banned all Bitcoin mining. And if that doesn't tell you something about the philosophy behind Bitcoin, is about self-reliance, individualism, and self-sovereignty. So obviously communists are not in that pool. And so they banned Bitcoin mining. Mining is just the computer power, right, that holds up the network. It's the buttress system that keeps everything going. So 40% of all global Bitcoin mining was housed in China. Well, what happened? The Bitcoin price dumped for a minute, and then it came back because
after the diaspora, it was banned, you mean, right? After it was banned, it dumped.
It dumped a little bit, yep, because it's significant event. But what happened was the network simply had a diaspora and it just relocated.
Yep.
Because it's decentralized. It, you know, Johnny with a miner in his garage is part of the Bitcoin network. And then there's corporations that have thousands of Bitcoin miners in warehouses in Iceland, you know, so it's just all over the world. So that is one massive strength. It's just like this amoeba that can't be, you know, quarantined into isolation, and no one can control it. There's no like central nervous system. Whereas right. Ethereum, big critique of them is that it's centralized, especially with their new migration. But I love Ethereum. As an investor, in terms of asymmetrical upside, there's way more upside there than there is with Bitcoin. So I'm going to kind of go with the Pepsi with the majority of my portfolio in the short term than I am with the Coca-Cola, which is Bitcoin. And I'm going to, because I know there's more market share to grab for them, and the more market share that's grabbed for Ethereum, and with the new burning process, their supply is going to be diminishing. It's going to give me more upside, but that's a personal investing decision.
Sure.
It doesn't mean that Ethereum is superior to Bitcoin in the long run. They're just different utilities.
Hey there, it's Mark Yeagy. I hope you're enjoying the show. Say, if you're interested in becoming involved in crypto technology, especially Bitcoin, but don't know how to go about it, I have some resources for you to go over on my website, wealtharchitectpodcast.com. And if you're a high net worth investor, I have something built especially for you and my other accredited investors. It's a fund specifically dedicated to the exciting future of Bitcoin and crypto. It's called the IntelliGrowth Digital Fund. Hey, listen, I know that if you haven't dedicated a few hundred hours to learning what's going on in Bitcoin space, it can be overwhelming. And that's why me and my team have spent thousands of hours determining the best way to invest, whether it's payment networks, storage, Bitcoin as a currency or a store of value, or even just how this technology is changing the world. I firmly believe that Bitcoin and crypto technology is here to stay. So you might as well have some exposure to it before it really takes off. I always tell my investors that we are all going to need to understand Bitcoin. The only question is whether you do it now, while it's also a great investment, or later when billions of people are using it every day, kind of like the internet. Anyway, if you want to find out how to be an investor, drop me a line here, mark@wealtharchitectpodcast.com, and we could see if it's right for your portfolio. Now, back to the show. You know, I like to look at it. It's a good analogy to look at it from the old world perspective, which, you know, it's not really old world, but it's the internet, right?
Yeah.
Is there room for Etsy and Amazon? Is there room for Coca-Cola and Pepsi? Is there room for Microsoft and Google? Well, I think there is. And everybody says, well, I don't believe in Bitcoin. I don't believe it's going to replace currency. Okay, that's cool. It may not replace currency, but I don't think it's going to go away. And I think it has a great utility. So I think Ethereum has some utility. I kind of disagree with you, but it doesn't matter because there's room for Bitcoin and Ethereum. I'm a big Bitcoin guy. I have some Ethereum, but I'm not as big on it. Yeah. But I love the utility of it. There are some really cool technologies and some cool stories out there. We could probably spend, you know, 5 hours going over all of them. The idea is that if you are interested in this really great up and coming exponential area of technology, you owe it to yourself to at least expose yourself somewhat to it. So I tell people to invest in Bitcoin, invest in crypto assets, right? Just a small part of their portfolio. If you're going to have some gold, maybe instead of having 5% in gold, you have 4% in gold and 1% in Bitcoin or 1% in crypto, or maybe it's some portion.
Sure.
Don't go all in like people were saying a couple of years ago. You got to go all in. It's going to double, triple, quadruple. It may. But if you're talking about that asymmetric risk, like you mentioned, you can't be betting your whole house on it because, you know, Bitcoin could go to zero, Ethereum could go to zero, they could all go to zero. But the asymmetric risk is so much higher because of the utility, because of the adoption, and because of the irresponsibility of the centralized bureaucrats that are printing all this infinite money. Sure. And by the way, we didn't mention this. Bitcoin has a top line. There'll never be more than 21 million Bitcoin ever made. And that's algorithmically programmed. Nobody can say, you know what? I think we need to double it. There's no Jerome Powell that's going to say, hey, let's add some more Bitcoin to the network. It's impossible because the nodes have to agree. And like you said, there's, you know, millions of people out there mining, trading, involved in it. And they're not going to agree to dilute themselves and create less value in Bitcoin.
Agreed. 100%.
Yeah, cool. So let's talk a little bit about what you guys do, you got really great, thoughtful things about how you go about investing. Obviously, you're not investing in all of them. You're investing in the ones that make sense to you. How do you decide which ones make sense to you and which ones don't?
I use a framework that I developed. It's actually just a bunch of lessons that I've learned over the years from people who are smarter and better at investing than I am. But when I got into crypto, I knew very quickly, okay, Josh, how do you keep yourself from like psychologically sabotaging your portfolio? You need a framework. And I wanted and it may not always be, this isn't the most pure investment approach, but I approach my portfolio more like a business, like a small business than I do maybe a traditional view of a portfolio. So I wanted to say, all right, how can I create cash flow inside my portfolio? How can I capture the accretive value of this asset class? And how can I use my current assets to buy more cash flowing assets? So I call it the crypto flywheel. It's just literally a circle with three arrows chasing each other clockwise. Sure. And cash flow, appreciation, leverage. Most people start in crypto at the appreciation stage, which is also, we also call it the buy, hold, and hope part of investing, which a lot of people do with stocks. You know, people do that with Tesla. But what ends up happening is casual first-time crypto investors will enter the market and they'll buy Bitcoin and Ethereum or something along those lines, whatever proportion. They might buy some dog coin because it's popular on Saturday Night Live or something, but they buy.
Yeah.
but they don't really, they're not, I mean, I don't say this, they're not sophisticated crypto investors. They're not thinking through things with a framework. And so what ends up happening is we all know the market moves in waves. If you zoom out, all it does is go up and down. It's like a wave pool. And so that doesn't mean you need to be a day trader. I don't day trade. I'm not a trader. I'm an investor. I make significant moves every 90 to 120 days, maybe sometimes 60 in a hyper volatile market. But where I differ now, as opposed to when I first started, was instead of buying and holding and hoping first, I like to establish cash flow. So I've ventured into the world of decentralized finance, or DeFi, which is a subsector of crypto. I think of crypto like martial arts. There's just all kinds of different disciplines, different genres. And so DeFi is where we add, it's quite literally the antithesis of the traditional banking system. It's where we add deposits or liquidity, and we earn a yield in a more democratized way, thanks to blockchain technology, algorithms, and smart contracts that can simply pay us back daily on the liquidity that we've added into a particular DeFi ecosystem. And so there are, yes, risk. Risk is something we're always managing in any portfolio environment. But in DeFi, what we're doing is we're earning just exorbitant annual percentage yields. Things that make the S&P 500 look like rearview mirror stuff. And we're able to double your money methodically, like over 12-month periods. But there's a lot of things you've got to take into account, because there's a lot of bad actors also out in the crypto space. You know, the more regulation we get, the better it'll be, but there's no FDIC. No one's, you know, insuring your deposits. It's unregulated as of right now. Now, by the time someone hears this recording, there could be very much regulation in the United States. But what I started doing is I started getting paid daily with my DeFi investments. And for lack of better words, it's like creating house money. And then I started moving the house money down to the second part of the flywheel and buying the things that I really believe in, buying more Bitcoin, buying more Ethereum, buying whatever. And that then became the way I dollar cost averaged into significant positions over a course of 2 to 3 years. And that helped me be methodical. It helped me not feel like I have to emotionally ape in with, you know, FOMO urges into the market. It just gave me kind of the steady stream of income inside of my portfolio to start stacking the things I truly believe in. So I'm using the utility of DeFi to produce reallocated capital into blue chips. And then leverage is the dangerous part for a lot of people, but there's different forms of leverage. For example, the most basic kind is during the last bull market, and I do not recommend this, and this is not financial advice, and especially in a bear market, but in the last bull market, I used Bitcoin as collateral to buy 2 rental properties. Sure. And then I used the rental properties to pay off the loan against my Bitcoin, and now I have, you know, multiple assets. So your audience will be familiar with leverage in that regard. But we can do that inside that asset class. So that's just kind of my approach. And then, you know, so the key is developing the skill of selecting what is good enough for your capital. That's the key.
Yeah. And, you know, it brings to mind a whole bunch of different things that I want to bring up. And let me push back a little bit and we'll have some fun with this, because there have been some crypto projects in the last 6 months that were deemed incredibly safe. They were stable coins, for example, that have now gone out of business. And, you know, the world is searching for a guy named Do Kwon right now. And, you know, he was one of the guys that apparently liquidated $40 million or whatever the number is. It doesn't really matter what the numbers are or who they are. It's just that when you get to a DeFi or a decentralized place, then people who are bad actors that you don't know are bad actors when you're giving them your money, all of a sudden take your money and then you're left with zero. It's not like you lost 10%. You generally get left with zero when these rug pulls happen on some of these cryptos. So I was approached last year, with some of the same opportunities, right? You can double your money in a year and you're going to get 20% by just staking your coins and doing all these things. And I said, where does that money come from? Right. So it didn't pass my smell test. And I'm glad I didn't get into that. I'm more of a Bitcoin guy, and I have a program in the in the equity side where I create cash flow, because I believe cash flow is really important. So how do you prevent those big catastrophic losses? I mean, great, we're talking about doubling your money in a year. That just doesn't sound like you put that in the bank and you get it. That sounds like you got to take some risk. How do you mitigate those risks, prevent those big catastrophic losses?
Well, to take your own advice from earlier in this episode, you don't invest in it's a spectrum. So there's a spectrum of risk out there, even in decentralized finance. I mean, it is so vast that we can't even discuss it all here, but don't invest more than you can afford to lose, obviously.
Yeah.
The DeFi space is highly speculative. It is micro cap investing at its best.
Like penny stocks, right?
Very much. But the functionality is unlike anything from the old world.
Yes.
Because of blockchain and because of ledger technology and because of smart contracts. And so what it allows us to do is take nominal amounts of capital, not the majority of your portfolio, and use those as almost like the way you use yeast to make more bread. That's kind of the idea with DeFi. Now, ultimately, we'll probably get to a place where DeFi is more self-regulating. It's more self-protective. We're not there yet. So in the process, you've got to develop a strategy to vet and qualify who you invest with. You know, are the developers doxed? Is there a KYC? Have they been audited? Can you publicly read those? Is there a white paper? Does it explain the roadmap? Are there open contract addresses that you can go and view on the ledger and see what the liquidity is? This is the skill that I'm alluding to, is like, how do you assess? And if anyone's listening, that's where you need to focus. Like 80-20 principle, 20% of what you do creates 80% of your success in your portfolio. That 20% activity oftentimes is simply your ability to lift the lid and look inside a DeFi project or any crypto and go, okay, that checks off, that checks off, that checks off. That's a red flag. That should inform how I mitigate my risk.
Yeah.
And if they're, you know, if all the developers are undoxed, which there are reasons for that at times, because there's crazy people all over the world that might try to chase you down. But if they're not doxed, if the smart contracts haven't been audited by a third party, maybe the smart contracts are created by bad actors that just literally take your money when you connect your wallet. Like, there are those risks. It's very much the ultimate expression of self-reliance. And that's what crypto is all about, is to become bankless, is to become self-reliant, self-sovereign, if you will. And the way you manage it just needs to be reflective, like you said, of your personality. Are you risk tolerant? Are you risk averse? And then using percentages, not entire life savings or treasuries, to do risky stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. I mean, I like the fact that there's due diligence in your process. It's not just, hey, you know, somebody tweeted out how great Dogecoin is, and so everybody moves to Dogecoin, they move out of it and they move to something else. At least you're, doing your best to do due diligence. And I know there's no guarantees, but that's a big part of this space. And it's like, if we want to go back to that analogy from 25 years ago, when, we were looking at eyeballs, I remember how all these businesses were built on, well, we're capturing, 100 million eyeballs a month. Well, that doesn't translate to revenues unless it translates to revenues. And so they were, a lot of these companies went out of business because they got a lot of eyeballs, but eyeballs don't put money in the bank. So, it's the same kind of risk. You've got to do your due diligence. It might sound like a great idea, but is there more under the hood that you can check out, right?
Yeah. And the two-edged sword of crypto, this is how I would explain it. It's so awesome, yet if you don't respect it, it's kind of like a firearm. Like, it can be an awesome tool of defense, but it can also be something that is self-damaging. Yeah. And you simply have to respect it. You have to respect it as an asset class. And I could say the same thing about people who invested in Enron. You know, it's just like, this is the humanity will find its way to contaminate or amplify an asset class. You know, plenty of real estate scams out there. But the thing about crypto is that it's so accessible.
Yeah.
You know, like if you've got a real estate contract in hand, you're not closing for 6 weeks, probably, maybe 30 days. If you've got 20, 50, 100 grand in hand right now, in the next 10 minutes, you can have it deployed into the crypto space.
Yeah, it's really amazing that way.
So there's this awesome accessibility and velocity and speed to the start line, but there are cautions and, like you said, diligence that needs to be pursued because not all opportunities are created equal.
Yeah. I wanted to buy something when I was overseas. I was just in Europe a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to buy something. I wanted to buy a motorcycle, and it was a Friday night, right? So I said, okay, how do I buy this motorcycle on Friday night? I don't have the cash there. So yeah. I had to move the money. Think about it. Friday night, your bank's not open. You got to wait the full weekend. And there was a holiday on Monday.
Yeah.
So I had to wait 4 days, actually 5 days before I could even move the money, really 4 days. And then I had to spend, you know, I had to beg to be able to, what are you using the money for? I had to, you know, answer a bunch of questions. Now that's there not to protect me. It's there to protect the bank. I don't care about the bank. I want to buy the motorcycle.
Exactly.
And you know, I could take the cash out of my pocket if I had it. Why does there have to be all these roadblocks if it's anything other than cash to be able to spend your money? So the utility there is incredible. And I think as more and more people get a Bitcoin or a cryptocurrency wallet, they'll be able to buy that motorcycle. I could have bought it in 10 minutes and said, okay, here's your money. Here's my, you know, here's, I'm transferring it to you. You see it in your wallet. Great. See you later. Thanks for the bike. And that is the whole key to it. It's the self-sovereignty. It's to be able to control yourself. A lot of people just don't trust themselves, and that's why they haven't adopted this yet.
That's right. And a lot of people, you don't know what you don't know.
That's
it is. Unfortunately, there's a lot of collateral damage on the front end of adoption curves. Yeah. And I wish it was another way, but there's just no way to get around it. But to say something controversial, your illustration is actually a great point that many Bitcoin maximalists make, which is that the traditional financial or fiat system is in itself a Ponzi scheme.
Sure it is.
Yet they call crypto many times a Ponzi scheme.
That's right.
Like you'll hear Jamie Dimon preaching it. But here's the funny part. While we all were looking over here last couple of years at this hand, the right hand, the traditional banking system, they now do not have to have more than 10% of fractional reserves on hand.
Major Ponzi.
Yeah. So it's like, why do you want this cash to buy your motorcycle? I want to buy a motorcycle. Well, we need to make sure we've got enough out back so that we can give it to you. So literally they need more depositors than ever to keep their liquidity. It is unbelievable. So
depositors are now the Fed. The Fed just says, oh, you don't have enough money. Here you go. Here's some more deposits.
Exactly. You know? So let's be our own bank. Yeah. 100%.
This is a total self-empowerment movement. And as people get more comfortable, it will be more accepted, but you're right. It's, you know, one Ponzi scheme, calling the other Ponzi scheme, a Ponzi scheme. Yeah. And at the end of the day, one is probably better than the other. And I can tell you, it's the one that we're not used to.
That's right. So, that's right.
But this is great. I love it. And I love the fact that we're going into lots of different things that most people don't go into, because most people are talking about Bitcoin now because of the big swoon that we had in the market over the last 12 months. And you know, a lot of people are like, well, I knew it was a bubble, right? But like you said, if you zoom out, maybe it's not such a bubble. Maybe it's actually an incredibly well-performing asset. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you guys do there at Crypto Y'all, which I love the name, and then we'll talk about how people can get some value from you.
Yeah. A couple of things. I work with people who are great everyday people. They've got capital that they want to invest intelligently. I'm not a financial advisor per se, but I am more of like a crypto mentor or coach enthusiast. I have training cohorts that people can go through. I have a community of investors who have skin in the game. We kind of crowdsource the intelligence together of the market. And it's better to invest in a group than alone. You know, it's kind of like a wolf pack, you know, protecting itself. So that's one of the big things I do. The training cohort's called Get Paid Daily, and it extends into a 12-month community membership. That's my flagship way that I help people, but it's very boutique. It's very high touch. It's very, cool. Very much not one of those things where you have 10,000 people in a Facebook group. It's more like a couple of hundred. So that's my passion. I love doing that. It's more like a mastermind setting. And then I have a newsletter. We have a free and a premium, or paid newsletter. But that's where we simply publish our, thought provoking ideas, and sometimes, or depending on the level of newsletter that you're a part of, you might get access to my altcoin picks and my portfolio, kind of like a Motley Fool type feel. So,
all right. So for people to get a little bit of an exposure to you, would you recommend that they start with your free newsletter?
Yeah. I would love that. If you go to cryptoyall.com, crypto y'all, if for those of you who do not understand the Southern dialect, that means you all, but y'all is short. And the fun part about that is I grew up in Northwest Alabama, where we just say, y'all come on in and stay a while. Somebody's at the front door, back before the internet, back before cell phones. Yep. If someone needed to borrow some sugar or some milk, or if they just wanted to visit, they would come to your door and knock. And if they were neighbors or friends, we would just say, come on in. And that's where we talked about life. That's where we crafted and forged relationships. And when I got into crypto, it felt like I had walked into this internet gamer chair, pump and dump, shilling Wild West. And I didn't know who to trust.
Right.
And I was just like, man, if I could just like talk to somebody that has core values, you know, just like maybe they've got a spouse and kids, and maybe they've got, you know, a house, and they're paying a mortgage, like real stuff. Maybe they own a business, or maybe they work at a, you know, maybe they're a key executive or a professional or whatever, doesn't matter, whatever walk of life. They're just normal folks. If I could just talk to people about crypto this way. So I wanted to merge where I'm from. Sweet tea, gravy biscuits, and comfort food with the greatest financial technology in history. And so that's where Crypto Y'all came from.
I love it. So it's Crypto Y-A-L-L. There's no apostrophe, right?
That's right.
.com. So that's where people can go to find out more about you and what you do. And you certainly sound like a guy that, and I know you're a guy that has a lot of thought behind what you do. And I see that you care about people, and that's a big deal. Let me just summarize a little bit about what we talked about, and then I know we can go on our way. But, you know, Bitcoin and some cryptocurrencies are the highest performing assets in history, fastest adoption curve. You know, you started out by being influenced by a guy that I've also been influenced, Robert Kiyosaki, with Rich Dad Poor Dad. I've met him, had some dinner with him. Interesting, crazy uncle kind of guy, but I love the way that he kind of shakes you up and makes you think about things in a different way. If you're going to invest, have a framework. Make sure that you're investing for cash flow. These are all things that I really believe in, and I'm so happy to hear that you do. You have a kind of an angle in DeFi that helps you create that cash flow, and you have a flywheel. And the idea is not to put all your eggs in one basket, but use it as a spectrum. Did I kind of get our conversation summarized pretty well?
You paid attention. Thank you.
I love what you had to say. And I really appreciate your time and your wisdom. And like I always tell people, never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. Thank you for being here, Josh. And thank you for being on another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Have a great day. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.